Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premiere Networks on Saturday, April 8th, 2017. This is episode 1378. Enjoy. Hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches, Twitter clones, virtual reality, augmented reality, reality. You know, sometimes we talk about that. Rarely. Occasionally we talk about real reality. Phone number is 8888-ASK-LEO. I'm logging in. You hear that typing? 888-82. It's hard to do logging in and say phone numbers. 827-5536, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can always use Skype to reach us. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Website, keep that up to date with all the things I talk about so you don't have to make notes or anything. TechGuyLabs.com. TechGuyLabs.com. And that's free and available and open. No sign up. No, I don't make you pay money to access it or anything like that. It's like the web used to be. Remember those days? The good old days. You just wander into a website, look around, leave. People wouldn't be collecting information about you. Your internet service provider wouldn't be making a note of that for future reference. None of that. TechGuyLabs.com. Can't promise anything about your internet service provider. I'm sorry to say. They probably are keeping track of all of that. There's a new kind of acronym you got to learn. You know, one of the things you learn if you listen to this show, and by the way, this show is not for geeks. This show is for normal people who would like to be geeks or who would just who would just like to be able to do something with technology, period. So I'll attempt to use plain English. But we do talk about, I mean, we talk about fairly significant topics here. For instance, there's a new acronym you need to know. You've heard of DDoS, the distributed denial of service attack. That's when bad guys bring a website to its knees by attacking it, a denial of service from all over, distributed all over the place. They shut it down by overwhelming it. There's a new acronym I just read about called PDoS. No, not now. Come on. Permanent denial of service. Permanent denial of service. Apparently, I guess you call them white hat hackers, people who have hacking skills but have decided to work for good, not evil, are creating, using the same techniques, you know, to attack Internet of Things devices, to find vulnerable Internet of Things devices. But instead of, when they find a vulnerable one, instead of taking it over and using it to their evil purposes, they brick it. They use the hack to destroy the device. They wipe all the files on it. They corrupt the device's storage. They disconnect it from the internet. They turn it into a brick. They break it. And their rationale is, well, if we didn't break it, somebody else would use it for a DDoS. So we're going to do a PDoS, a permanent denial of, so we're going to take the thing offline. A research security firm had created what they call a honeypot. I love this idea. A series of systems designed to attract evildoers. Kind of a honeypot looks kind of tasty and come on, boys. And then the bad guys go there and they get stuck. They create a honeypot to attract these PDoS attacks. And they detected 2,250 attempts on these devices from two separate botnets, BrickerBot 1 and BrickerBot 2, located with nodes all over the world. They tried to log into this honeypot roughly once every 2 hours and tried to break them. So there's a war, you know, there's a war going on that we don't even see over the internet between white hat and black hat and gray hat hackers. Wow. I think it's fascinating. And all of this is because we put devices on the internet that have very little security. Devices like, well, your routers, one, DVRs, cameras, doorbells, you know, refrigerators, microwaves, color TVs, and all of these. I think I just channeled a rock song. Anyway, the point is that these devices aren't really designed to be secure. They're just designed to be on the internet. But the problem is they're also on your network, so they're publicly available and on your network, and they can be used by bad guys. So we're kind of stuck with this because a lot of us have these things. You know, light bulbs. Those Hue lights, for instance, for Philips, those are hackable. Hack your light bulbs. Yes, people do that. Microsoft has announced its new gaming console, which will be available sometime around the holiday season this year. Scorpio. Man, is this a fast device. 6 teraflops. There's another acronym for you. 6 trillion floating point operations per second. Which isn't that meaningful, but it means it's fast, very fast. Not fast enough to do, you know, true 4K gaming, although this is Microsoft's goal. It will be a very powerful machine. It has a graphics processing unit with 40 units clocked at 1.1 gigahertz. 40 GPUs. It's got an 8-core processor, brain processor. They call it an evolved version of the processor in the current Xbox One. Faster, stronger, more powerful, and vapor-cooled. Ooh. You can't just put that thing on your shelf and play games. It'll get really hot. So they have a special cooling system. Wow. Built into this. There'll also be a big old fan on it that'll blow hot air out of the back just in case you need a little heat in the house. So you got a supercomputer just to play video games. 12 gigabytes of the latest memory spec, DDR5. Not 4, no, though, 5. 8 gigabytes will be dedicated to games. 4 gigabytes background processes and overhead. That's a lot more memory. Maybe even than your regular computer. This thing is, you know, probably more powerful than any computer you've ever had in the house, unless you have a really high-end gaming system. So Microsoft has released the information about its next gaming system prior to the big gaming conference, E3, which is coming up in June. And I think they said the reason is they wanted everybody to focus on the games at E3, not on the power. Just be rest assured, they said. When you can buy this, months from now, it will be very powerful. They're promising 4K. They're not promising 60 frames a second. That's the holy grail for console gaming. But if you're interested, it looks pretty good. Looks pretty impressive. Eurogamer has the story. They were given an exclusive at 6 a.m. on Thursday. Was it Thursday or Friday? 6 a.m. You had to get up early and read Eurogamer to find out what was going on. There's a new social network in town. I've been playing a lot with it, Mastodon. I imagine we'll get some calls. How do I use this? It looks like Twitter, but it's much more complicated. Oh, good. I like it. But you know why I like it? I have a shameful confession. Because it's full of geeks. It's too hard to use for normal people. So unlike Twitter, which is full of all sorts of random stuff. This pretty much sticks to geek talk. I like that. You can find out more at mastodon.social. And if you really are interested, I can explain how it works, but I doubt anybody is. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the phone number. I see Heather Hammond is ready wearing her Burberry. So we will let her start answering the phones as of now. Actually, she started a long time ago, but we'll take your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 88. Ask Leo. Oh, you look good in that Burberry there, Heather Hammond. Isn't that the Burberry plaid you're wearing?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I take these things seriously.
That's the real deal. And a little faux fur trim looks very good. I don't know why we're doing a fashion show on the radio, but we are. And now, walking the runway.
To get people to check out the online content.
We do stream a video version of the show. Again, I don't know why.
If you love tech, you'll love Heather's poncho. I don't know why.
It's a Burberry poncho. Wow, that's cool. Well, it's cool, literally, outside, and it's rainy, and I think it's perfect for the weather.
Yeah, last chance to wear it this season.
Plus, we do, in fact, put you in a freezing cold room.
It's true.
It's our meat locker. We're aging some fine sides of beef in there, along with our phone answerer.
Someone
I'm sorry.
Send me a Snuggie.
That's so cold.
Is that blanket cold. That's a...
Yeah, the Snuggie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a couple. I have a Google Snuggie.
Oh, nice.
Well, not really.
You're the tech guy. People send you things.
Yeah, it's a little weird. So, you've been answering the phone since the crack of dawn and have lined up a wonderful panel of people with questions galore, right?
Yes, I have.
And to whom is the party to whom I'm speaking first?
Scott, who's on I-44. We think he's still in Oklahoma, but he might have crossed over to another
state. Okay, I hope you're on hands-free. Yeah. Thank you, Heather. Hi, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Doing well. Yes, I am hands-free.
Hands-free. But your hands are on the wheel.
Yes, absolutely. I am a professional.
Actually, you sound like you're using one of those great Blue Parrot headsets because the noise cancellation is excellent. If you're actually driving, I don't hear a thing.
Yep, Blue Parrot, I am driving.
I can actually detect Blue Parrots now.
Oh, yeah, they're great.
They're distinctive because the noise canceling is so good.
Yep, and I can hear you well.
Nice.
So,
what can I do for you today?
Well, I'm trying to get a printer for my truck. I'm an OTR truck driver. Trying to get a printer, and the rumor is that the constant vibrations of the truck will make the ink gel.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I have no experience with that. But it's funny. I get calls all the time from long-haul truckers who basically want to set up offices in their cabs right in the truck. Why not? Yeah, you're there all the time.
Exactly.
Pretty soon you'll have that auto thing that'll drive a truck, and you can just kind of you can have a separate business in the back.
Yeah,
you're not
good thing.
Probably not too fond of that notion.
I've figured out other things to do before, so.
Yeah, well, it's actually going to be an interesting challenge, but I suspect at least in the first few years they'll still want humans in the cab. I'm terrified at the thought of a 18-wheeler without any, but, just controlled by a computer. That doesn't, you still need to, exit the freeway at some point.
Well, especially with all the pranksters that would just love to hack into the truck while it's going down.
Well, we were talking about the internet, security of the Internet of Things, but these, absolutely, we know that car systems are very hackable. Terrifying.
Sure.
All right, so would an inkjet, I don't know, chat room. Would an inkjet? I would think it'd actually be the opposite, that the constant vibrations would be good for the ink and keep it mixed up nicely.
Right. The thing is with truckers and tech is that everybody hears something, but nobody knows.
Well, but you do reach consensus. I mean, this Blue Parrot headset's a very good example. I mean, now they sell them in truck stops everywhere because I think the community kind of agrees. Hey, this works. And they tell, and everybody says, yeah, this works.
Yep.
So I think probably the problem with inkjet printers is not a whole lot of truckers yet have printers in their trucks.
No, yeah, we all pretty much use truck stops for that kind of
thing.
If I can stay out of a truck stop.
I don't blame you.
It's better.
Yeah, I don't blame you. What, how much duty does it need? Do you need color? Do you need to print a lot of paper? How much do you need to print?
I would only really need black and white. I only really wish I had a printer in the truck maybe two or three times a month.
Yeah.
And maybe maybe 8 or 10 pages a month. Maybe.
Yeah, not very much. And you probably would only print when you're stationary. You're not going to be printing while you're driving, obviously.
Correct. Yeah.
So there'll be no vibration during printing. You're just worried about in between when you drive down the road. Chat room suggesting a number of things. One is a inexpensive laser printer would probably be just fine, since you don't do color. And you know, the way a laser printer works, I don't think it would be in any way affected by the vibration. You know, the way a laser printer works, just like a Xerox machine, you have a metal drum which is charged electrostatically to attract ink, the toner. Toner is stored in a cartridge. The drum rotates, it gets charged up to reflect the paper, you know, the print, what it wants to print, and then they scatter toner over it, and then it prints it out. And I don't think in any way vibration would hurt any of that, any more than vibration would hurt any mechanical device. I mean, anything that with moving parts could be shaken apart eventually.
Sure. But, oh, yeah, I've gone through a refrigerator.
Yeah. But I think a cheap laser printer might be certainly they're as little as $100 now. They're very inexpensive. They're probably better for light duty. Inkjet tends to get clogged if you don't use it pretty regularly.
Right.
The only negative on the laser is power.
I've got household current here. So,
I figure you've got a pretty good alternator in that thing, and you can generate a lot of power.
Yep. Yeah, I've got that. I've got 1,100-watt inverter, and
yeah.
I can run my refrigerator. And
yeah, and the reason is it heats up. You know, the laser printer has to heat up to fuse the toner. After it's discharged from the drum onto the paper, then it fuses it on the paper with the little heater. Gotcha. And as you know, heaters use some power. I think that'd be a good technology. Somebody's also saying, you know, for really light duty, thermal might be a good choice. And there are portable thermal printers. Their quality isn't great.
I know, I consider thermal, but now will that fade over time?
I think not.
Like a fax will fade.
It's like a fax. I mean, it uses special paper, and the thermal prints because the paper, you know, can be modified with heat. Sure. That's a good question. Faxes do fade, but those are pretty old. That's like 10 years ago. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
I don't know if it's gotten better. Chat room, what do you think? Will modern thermal printers... if you don't leave it in the sunlight, somebody says, well, okay. That's not encouraging. I would say, I think what you probably want to do is an inexpensive laser printer.
Laser. All right. Well, that makes sense.
I think that'd be your best bet. It still could be shaken apart, but it's not. But, you know, if you think about it, what an inkjet printer is doing, it's a very, precise device. It disperses... Sure. many millions of picoliter drops per second. And so it has to be a very precise device. I think it'd be much more – I wouldn't worry about the ink gelling. In fact, I think it'd be the opposite, so much as I'd worry about the thing being shaken apart. And I think a laser printer would probably be a little bit better.
Okay. Well, that's what I'll do. Yeah. All right.
All right.
Answer. I appreciate your help.
Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. You know, it's funny. We're combining some pretty ancient technology here. Trucks and printing. Do you I guess people still print. Weren't we supposed to have the paperless office by now? Somebody said the paperless office is about as likely as a paperless bathroom. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. A dot matrix. There you go. An Epson MX-80.
You'd have to get rid of that.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, and that bump de bump. Can only mean one thing. Scott Wilkinson, the Santa Claus of AV reporters. Ho, ho, ho. He's our home theater geek. You'll see him on twit.tv/HTG, our Home Theater Geeks podcast. I hate using the word podcast. I always have.
I know. Netcast.
Netcast. It seems demeaning because it sounds like it's some guy in his basement on an audio thing.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's a full video production. You're in a studio.
Yeah.
And,
you know. High production value.
Yeah. And you talk to amazing people.
Oh, I know. I love the guests I get, and we talk about all kinds of really cool stuff.
It's also he's also besides being a regular on this show and his podcast, he's editor in chief at the AVS Forum at avsforum.com. I was telling you, I had mentioned last week that my BBC Planet Earth 2 UHD DVD had come.
UHD Blu-ray, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Blu-ray. And I do have a UHD Blu-ray player in my Xbox One S.
Correct.
So it's hard to explain to the family, no, we can't watch it in the living room. We have to watch it in my man cave. I don't want to go in your man cave, but that's where the 4K UHD TV is. You convinced me, and I am very happy that you did.
With HDR, with high dynamic range as well.
To buy the LG B6 from 2016. And you and Robert Herron of Herron Fidelity very kindly calibrated it for me, so I know I'm watching a great panel.
Yep.
In a darkened room and on Blu-ray, UHD, HDR, OMG.
Add some more letters to that.
So just as Planet Earth 1, which is 10 years ago, was the first really popular 1080p disc, really, I think, sold a lot of HD TVs. This should sell a lot of 4K TVs. If you see this in the proper viewing conditions, with surround sound, because Hans Zimmer's amazing soundtrack is...
Oh, he did the music? I didn't realize that.
And lots of like big boom, boom kettle drums. And gosh.
Sure. Hans Zimmer's great. He's massive.
When the peregrine falcon swoops in on the pigeon, boom, 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 boom. It's very dramatic.
Oh,
beautiful. OMG. I say again, beautiful.
I just got my copy yesterday.
Oh, good.
So I'm about to start watching.
It feels like you're looking through a window at these events. And, of course, they're shooting stuff so remarkable. An island in Antarctica where chinstrap penguins, mate and rear their young. And such a dramatic story. They take turns, the mother and father, swimming 60 kilometers out to feed. Mm-hmm. Then they have to swim all the way back and then walk another 2 or 3 kilometers on these little bitty penguin legs. And find their family and then feed the babies.
Yeah.
And then they take turns doing this every other day. It's just dramatic as heck and beautiful. And then you watch the third disc, which is how they made it, and you realize these people risked their lives to get to this island.
Yeah.
And it's on and on like that. I mean, the point of view stuff, they had so they wanted to show how golden eagles, what it must look like for a golden eagle to soar in the mountaintops in the Alps, in the Swiss Alps. So they got a guy who's a paraglider, and they said, well, put this, and it wasn't a GoPro on his head, put this big camera on your head.
Oh, man.
But then, so they shoot it for a while, but they realize that in order to safely do this, because he's skimming the rocks, he has to look, right, back and forth. So the camera shot they're getting is, like, terrible.
Yeah.
So the next thing they try, I hope this isn't a spoiler. Well, it is a spoiler, but only for a behind the scenes disc of a TV show. But he tandems. He gets the professional paraglider attaches a cameraman to his front. The cameraman has never done this before.
Oh, man.
And the cameraman is shooting. And it's amazing video because it really is. Now in 4K high dynamic range, you are seeing what a golden eagle would see as he soars through the Swiss Alps, close to the rocks, plummeting at 300 kilometers an hour to strike. I mean, it's incredible.
Wow.
Incredible. So I highly recommend this, even in 1080p, and you can stream it. It's for sale. I saw it on Amazon and other places.
Right.
You can stream it.
But man, oh man, if you can see it in high dynamic range, I'll bet you there are scenes in dark places.
Yes.
Caves or what have you.
Yes.
And unlike 1080p standard dynamic range, you can probably see a lot of detail in those dark caves, which you wouldn't be able to see in standard dynamic range. Man, I can't wait. It's
awesome. One of the things I always notice with streaming video is when you do have a solid color, particularly solid blacks, you can see the banding from the compression.
Yes.
You don't get any of that on a Blu-ray UHD disc.
I'm not at all surprised. It's still compressed.
Solid black.
It's still compressed, but it's compressed using the latest compression technology called HEVC, High Efficiency Video Codec. Which does a much better job than what we've used before, which you can say about almost any technology, right? I mean, as we move forward, things get better.
Yeah.
And this is now the culmination of what the technology can do, at least for the home.
I've seen a significant amount of HDR content. I've even bought a few HDR Blu-rays, but nothing as good as this. This is, they shot it all on red cameras.
Oh, yeah, Red Digital Cinema. Wonderful cameras.
Yeah.
The Hobbit was shot on that.
Yeah.
House of Cards was shot on that. A lot of productions use the Red Digital camera. to capture stuff. And that's certainly high dynamic range, at least 4K. The current RED cameras are more than 4K, which is always a good idea to shoot at a higher resolution than you're going to end up with.
Interestingly, they also use for like camera traps and remote cameras, DSLRs.
Yes, we were just talking about that in the chat room, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Full frame sensors are 4K.
Yep.
And so they were able to shoot, I presume, 4K 60 frames per second of video. And it got some remarkable video of, you know, tigers up close, you know, amazing stuff.
I wonder what the final frame rate is of the UHD Blu-ray. It probably says.
Could it be 60p?
It could.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's possible. The question is, when you see motion, when you see this point of view shot of from the cameraman with
the rock solid. Yeah.
You know, and he's diving and shooting around and things are moving very fast. Does the image get blurry or does it stay really sharp?
I would love to have you to sit next to you watching it so you could say, because I don't have your eye. I don't know what to look for, but I'd love to hear what you think of this. And I'm going to have to watch it again and again.
Again.
The only problem I have, and I don't, maybe it's the incredible narration of David Attenborough, who is just wonderful in this. But for some reason, maybe it's just nature films, but I fall asleep every time.
Really?
So it takes me about twice as long. Because halfway through, and then I have to watch the other half. But
wake up and go, wait, where did I leave off?
It's for the first time really shown me why I bought a 4K HDR TV. It is, and I think it's probably also the content is suited to it. You don't really care so much if an action adventure movie or a period piece is 4K. In fact, you don't really want movies to be hyper real. You want documentaries to be hyper real, though, right?
Well, and therein lies a great conversation. Do you want movies to look like movies have looked for the last 100 years?
Yeah.
Or do you want to push the technology forward? And there is some resistance to that.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people say, no, I don't want to shoot any more than 24 frames per second because that's what movies are supposed to be.
They also use drones, and they show at one point a drone, industrial drones, not the DJI Phantom drones that we're used to, but really large industrial drones because they had to hold – you know, these Sony
heavy camera,
Sony cameras and the Canon cameras that they were using to shoot. It's pretty amazing. Yeah. Anyway, I just used your whole segment, so I'm sorry, but I had
to
tell you.
That's quite all right. Oh, yeah. I have to. Now I'm even more.
Your technical eye to tell us next week what I missed.
All right.
Scott Wilkinson, Home Theater Geeks, twit.tv/HTG. He's also at the avsforum.com and joins us every week. Thank you, Scott.
You bet.
Somebody said, do you fall asleep four times faster on a UHD TV? Yeah, I think so. Both Lisa and I, it's funny. And I think maybe it's nature films. But I do think that that's where it's – in reality, there's no issue with it being more real, right? You want it to be as real as possible.
Certainly on a nature documentary.
Yeah. So it's really the perfect format for this, I think.
The perfect medium, yeah.
Yeah. All right. I'm not going to take up more of your time. I've already took up enough of your time, so I'll let you go.
Well, that's quite all right. By the way, though, I should tell you, you mentioned next week, and next week I will not be here. I'll be at the Renaissance Fair.
Oh, he'll be wearing his baggy trousers and playing the sack butt. Or did I have that reversed? He'd be wearing his sack butt and playing the baggy trousers. It's one or the other.
It's one or the other, yeah.
I think it's kind of sack butt and baggy trousers go, the baggy tights go together, really.
Kind of do go together, yeah exactly. You know, my wife said, you know what? We haven't been to the fair in some
years. Oh, I'm glad you're going to go. I'm glad you're going to go.
So we're going to get all dressed up, and we're going to go, so...
All right.
Anybody in the area want to come?
Can you stick around for the top two?
I can.
All right, great. All yours.
Thank you. So let's see. Web4934 says, do you recommend Xbox One S as a UHD Blu-ray player? Yeah, I do, actually. I haven't played with one myself, but obviously Leo has. And while it doesn't do Dolby Vision, which would be the reason I wouldn't recommend it, but there aren't any Dolby Vision encoded Ultra HD Blu-rays yet. The first two have been discovered. It was kind of interesting. my readership, AVS Forum, are very eagle-eyed, and they miss nothing. And so somebody from the community on a different website posted, and maybe I think on AVS as well, posted that they had seen the Dolby Vision logo, the tiny little logo on the back of the case, which was on Amazon, just as a picture, because it's not out yet, of Despicable Me and Despicable Me 2. So those two Ultra HD Blu-rays are the first that we know of to have Dolby Vision encoding on them. And they're not going to be out till June. So it's possible that some other disc might beat them to the punch to be the first in the market with Dolby Vision. But these are the first we know about. Otherwise, there aren't any. And so that isn't a real problem for the Xbox One S, because it can play HDR10 discs, which is what all discs have been up till now. But I think this year we are going to see, and some studios have promised that we're going to see, discs with Dolby Vision. And when those come out, they'll be able to be played in the Xbox One S because they will also have HDR10. That's required. UHD Blu-ray requires HDR10 for HDR, high dynamic range content. You can optionally also put Dolby Vision on the disc, and now we're going to start seeing those come out. So even those discs will be playable perfectly well in the Xbox One S UHD Blu-ray player. It just will use the HDR10 metadata, not the Dolby Vision metadata. And I happen to think Dolby Vision is better than HDR10 because of what's called dynamic metadata, as opposed to HDR10, which uses static metadata. So for that reason, I think Dolby Vision is better. But, you know, the player is fine. Oh, thank you, Ed in HB. He's thanking me. Well, loquacious, which costume am I going to be wearing to the fair? I think I'm going to be wearing my it's not a peasant costume exactly. I'd say it's more middle class for the Renaissance. I've got a nice doublet and a puffy sleeve shirt, and it's kind of in a green and orange.
Thank you, Scotty. Got to cut you off.
Okay, we'll be here at the top of the hour.
All righty. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888, Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Gary is on the line from Laguna Niguel, California. Hi, Gary.
Well, that was interesting talking about the Golden Eagle. Boy, that sounds interesting.
Oh, man. I guess I do like – I was going to say I don't like nature documentaries. I don't normally seek them out, but I have to say every time I see them, I love them. And the BBC Planet 1 from 10 years ago was phenomenal. And by the way, this is all new material, so it doesn't duplicate any of the material, so you can watch both.
And I'll tell you, Sir David Attenborough, I've met him personally.
Have you?
In Portal, Arizona.
A legend. And he – you know, I don't – how old? He must be almost 80 now.
Oh, he is. He is.
But he sounds phenomenal, and he really brings it to life. He's the best narrator out there, I think.
I'll tell you, when I met him, it was in Portal, Arizona. I was out looking for snakes at night along the Portal Road.
Oh, he's 90. He's 90.
Okay.
Wow.
He's absolutely phenomenal because he saw me at night, and we were both looking for snakes at night because I like seeing snakes and photographing them at night. And then earlier in the very next day, I was having breakfast, and I chatted with him for nearly half an hour.
Wow. I'm so jealous.
He's quite an amazing
I'm so person. Jealous. There is some snake footage in this new one from the Galapagos Islands of racer snakes, and it so terrified my wife. She said, "That's the I'm not – because we're going in June." She said, "I'm not going to that island."
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't mind a snake. It's interesting. I guess Attenborough is famous for his love of snakes.
Well, I'll tell you, his special on the birds – matter of fact, that's what I talked to him about. You know, he did a 13-part series on the life of birds.
Wow.
I'll tell you, Leo, if you ever have a chance to watch that, watch that. That will not bore you and put you to sleep. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Especially the hummingbird. Especially the hummingbird episode.
Well, I will...
in Arizona. Yeah.
I will seek it out because he is truly a genius, a brilliant narrator. Anyway, what can I do for you?
Well, let's talk about TV rates. Oh, my God. My cost bill. Leo, is there a less costly alternative, maybe?
Did I lose you? You just faded out there. You actually give me an opportunity to talk about something I'm very excited about. So, yeah, the cable companies get us. I wanted to use a stronger word. Get us in two different ways. One, of course, they charge a lot of money. But two, they do bundles, right? You can't – if you just wanted to watch Game of Thrones, you couldn't. I guess you could get HBO, but it's expensive. So this is kind of what the music industry did until iTunes came along and said, hey, what about a la carte, 99 cents a song? You buy just the song you want. And that's, I guess we lost him. That's, I think, what's maybe about to happen to the cable industry. YouTube just launched this week. There are several over-the-top bundles designed to replace your cable. They use the internet only. That's what over-the-top means. AT&T has one called DirecTV Now. Don't like it. Wouldn't recommend it. Sling's been around for a long time with their Sling TV. That's a lot better. Until recently, the best one was PlayStation's offering. And I recommend you look at PlayStation View. They have just like a – it's just like really – it's kind of run like a cable company. They're packages and bundles, and there's different tiers. The cheapest tier, I think, is $45 a month. But watch out, because this week, here comes Google with their new YouTube TV. Now, it's only available in 5 cities in the U.S. right now. And I'm not sure what their timetable is for getting it in more cities. This is part of the problem all of these services face, is they have to go into each area and negotiate with the local channel. Because, unfortunately, I can see it here in the San Francisco Bay Area. I think it's San Francisco, L.A., New York. Is it Dallas? If you go to tv.youtube.com, you can see which metros it's available in now. $35 a month. Very heavily focused on sports and news. So you get all the news channels and you get all the sports channels. And I mean all of them, not just all the ESPNs. You get Fox Sports 1 and 2. You get, at least here in the Bay Area, the local Bay Area. I could watch all the Bay Area games. Should be aware that the NFL and I suppose Major League Baseball and the NBA may have similar rules, have blackout rules that don't apply on your cable TV when you're watching cable TV, right? You can watch any game. Those rules have been loosened. They used to blackout local games if they weren't sold out. They may still do that. I guess just all the games are sold out now. But they're very restrictive about mobile. And so the way YouTube TV handles this, and you got to read this carefully before you subscribe, is by you can watch it on your TV, but you can't watch it on your mobile device. They know how you're watching it. There are Android and iOS apps. It also uses Google's Chromecast technology, so you could put it on your big screen TV through Chromecast using your phone or tablet as a control. It has, in my case, all the locals, as well as all the sports channels, all the news channels. It has a few kids channels, but not Cartoon Network. It's kind of, as with all of these, you have to negotiate with these different content creators and cable companies or television companies, and you know, they all have different theories about what they should be doing. Some of them are using Hulu only. Some of them have their own systems. So it's tricky. They just added AMC. You can add Showtime for an additional fee. You can't add HBO or Cinemax or Stars. They don't have a deal with them. Although it's Google, it's YouTube. I think in time this will expand. But right now, it's easily the best solution out there. Beats them all. $35, has unlimited DVR, and it's the user interface is spectacularly easy to use, so much better than your cable TV guy, partly because you're doing it on a computer or a tablet or a phone, but you can easily say, I want to DVR Modern Family from now on, and it'll just be there. You can have up to 6 people on an account, so using Google's family sharing technology, you can share it with your members of your family. They have full access to for no additional cost. And they have their own DVRs. The DVR is unlimited. You know, I have a TiVo with hundreds of hours because I bought a big TiVo, drive. But this is unlimited. The quality will vary. I've seen 720p programming. I have not seen 1080p. That may be there. I just haven't seen everything. And I've seen some programming is 480p, which is standard def. But if you're looking to replace your cable company, one of the catches in all of this has always been, how do I get live news? How do I get the Oscars and the Super Bowl. How do I get those live events that only local channels broadcast? I want live local news. How do I get that? And PlayStation View in some markets has that, and YouTube TV has that. And I think it looks as if they're not going to roll out into markets until they do. If you're in one of the five markets that they currently support, you can get a 30-day free trial, and it's worth looking at. TV.YouTube.com. The reason I mention this, because so many of us can't get it, but if you can, it's very impressive. But more importantly, it really, for the, I think we're now seeing the dawning of the cord-cutting era. The thing to understand, and when I say, yeah, right on, the thing I have to say, cord cutting is just, you know, sticking it to the man. We're going to get rid of our cable company, right? But you should understand you probably aren't doing it to save money, unfortunately. It's probably going to end up because, well, they're not stupid. They've raised the cost of internet to the point where it's probably going to end up costing you when you add internet plus, you know, YouTube TV plus Showtime, whatever you want to see. You may not save a lot of money. You'll have to do the math for yourself. But you're still sticking it to the man. Given the high popularity of cable companies, I think this is a very popular thing to do. it's sending a signal to the cable companies too that, you know, eventually they have to unbundle. They have to solve this. And it's sending a direct message to the people who create this stuff. You can go direct to your customers. Right now you have to go through YouTube if you want to do this. But eventually you can go direct. I'm pretty excited about this. This is the first one, and I've tried all of them, you know, because they all have free trials. And I encourage you to do the free trials. DirecTV Now, Sling TV, PlayStation View, all offer one-week trials. TV.YouTube.com offers a one-month trial. The other reason I'm bullish on this is because anybody under 25 probably doesn't watch TV. They watch YouTube. So all the YouTube content is there as well. So this is going to appeal very strongly to kids, young people getting out of college, kind of setting up life, young adults. They're going to look at a cable subscription and say, I can't afford that. They're going to have internet, right? They might very well say, hey, for $35, I can get this YouTube TV. I watch all this YouTube content. This sounds more, this feels to me like a great play for the millennial market. Anyway, just a thought. Thank you for the call. I'm sorry we got cut off. I hope that helps. Give it a try anyway. Leo Laporte, VTech guy. More of your calls right after this. I don't think YouTube TV includes Red. So Red is a separate $10 thing, which is the ad-free YouTube. So this is my DVR. So these are all scheduled. I mean, I just kind of randomly chose stuff. Scheduled recordings. This is the interface. So new shows to record, popular live TV. So this is kind of like a highlighted thing, movies. What's interesting is these are live. All four of these are live right now. So this is sports on right now. And then this is their cable guide, which is, I think, the best I've ever seen. And what's nice is when you go to a station, it shows you the station, shows you what's on right now. So, you know, that's pretty impressive. So you wanted to watch the Masters. Well, you have to have CBS. Well, to watch the CBS, this you know, eliminates the need for an antenna or cable. A lot of sports stations, have even the Golf Network. Here's Disney, Disney Junior, Disney XD, and Sprout. I think Freeform's a kids. So those are the kids. It doesn't have a lot of the kids' networks. Nickelodeon's not there. They're not making those deals. FX, FXX, FXM, Universal, USA, National Geographic, Sci-Fi, Bravo, E, Oxygen. Here's the news block. Fox, MSNBC, CNBC, Fox Business. I thought CNN was on here. Maybe not. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I thought CNN was on here. It is not. But now CNN you can watch on a live stream. Oh, but do you have to have a cable subscription? You might. Okay, well, that's interesting. So they haven't made a deal with AOL. Anyway, I'm very impressed by this. So this is $35 a month. Oh shoot! I just used up all of Scott's time. No, I didn't. There's a little bit more.
A little bit of time.
John just came in to remind me that you're still hanging around. I'm so sorry.
That's all right.
I got caught up in that description of what's going on. All yours. I'll shut up.
Thank you. It's your show. you guys were talking about, you know, live TV over the internet, which is a new thing. It's a coming thing. I haven't tried it myself yet, actually. We've been talking about Ghost in the Shell in the chat room. And I have my review on AVS Forum. It's already kind of down at the bottom of the homepage, so find it out there if you can. And, the visuals are so amazing. And the sound, too, the Dolby Atmos sound. I saw it in a Dolby Cinema with Dolby Vision HDR and Atmos Surround, Atmos Immersive, I should say. And it just looks and... looks and sounds so amazing, just really amazing. But I myself did not find the story very deep. I was hoping for some deep philosophical ruminations on the nature of humanity in the face of technological implants and enhancements and so on. Everybody, all the reviews I've read have said that, the original anime, that was what that was. It was so deep and so philosophical. And I watched it and I thought, this is not deep. It's cheesy and horrible. But then someone pointed out that I was watching the English dubbed version. And what I should really watch is the original Japanese with subtitles, of course, since I don't understand Japanese. I was given some examples. And if you go to my review of Ghost in the Shell, you'll see some examples from people who said, look, in the dubbed version, they say this if you translate the Japanese directly. And in the English dubbed version, they say something completely different. That there is some validity probably to that, but I can't see how it would be that much different. I really can't. In any event, I thought the new movie was going to solve that problem, and it didn't. And then there's the whitewashing problem, which is casting Scarlett Johansson, a white woman, as the major, who is supposed to be Japanese. And the plot of the movie actually explains why that is, which I thought was kind of interesting. But it still comes into a pretty serious problem of, white standards of white beauty being higher than standards of Asian beauty. The white savior syndrome. It's all written about in my review. So go check it out. Ghost in the Shell on avsforum.com. Anyway, so that is how I see that. Web 4934 asks, any recommendations for good budget subwoofer? Yeah, there are plenty. SVS, I recommend. Shoe. I forget how to spell his name now. It's a Chinese name. Makes really good ones. Pretty inexpensive. Monoprice, also. I would say go to avsforum.com and look under subwoofer reviews, because my colleague Mark Henninger has reviewed... several recently. Emily DeStrange, but it's not whitewashing if the actor or actress does a better job in the role. It's talent washing, if anything. Well, okay, that's certainly a reasonable position. You want the best actor for the job, but, it's a Japanese role. Anyway, Shu, thank you, Sandman. HSU, thank you very much. All right, that's it.
Thank
for me.
You, Scott. Sorry about that. And I won't see you next week. We'll see you in two.
See you in two.
Thank you, sir.
Thank
Take
you.
Care.
Bye.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. I am the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere. in the U.S. or Canada, outside that area, well, you can still call. Just use Skype Out. Skype Out will do it. 8888-ASK-LEO. David on the line from Chatsworth, California, where all the hard drives used to be made. Hi, David.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you. So I've got this ThinkPad with XP Pro on it, and I've been meaning to replace the drive and do a clean install.
Yeah.
And since Microsoft doesn't offer the ISO anymore, would you know any legit source to get that?
That's an interesting question. We don't, you know, XP has reached its end of life. I did it about 2 years ago.
Right.
So Microsoft no longer offers patches of any kind for it. And as you point out, they don't want you to download it. You can probably go to eBay and buy. What you'll want to get, though, is a shrink wrapped if you can. And actually, that's not even a very good test because there's, you know, crooks on eBay that have shrink wrappers. That's
exactly,
nothing.
Right.
But what if it's on a DVD, you know, a Microsoft DVD. And in that period, Microsoft started making their DVDs with kind of three-dimensional, they call them holographic labels, to deter piracy. So if it's a legitimate DVD, you can trust it because those can't be modified. If it's a homemade DVD, you throw it out. You can't install it because you don't know how it's been modified. But if you can get, and there are people on eBay who sell these, you know, because they have them lying around. Maybe they sold computers in the day and they had 300 copies of XP and they never sold them.
All right. Yeah. And does it have to be, this is an XP Pro, does it have to be specific for this version or it can be
No, it doesn't matter because if you get a legitimate copy of XP, it has its own serial number and you'll activate it with that and it won't matter.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
So because you're buying it, you know, a real version of it, it has its own serial number. You can install it anywhere once.
Right.
Yeah, I don't. I guess they can. Actually, here's an interesting question: do the authentication servers, do they still run? Can you still authenticate? I have not heard that you cannot. They'd have to keep those running.
I sure hope so.
I hope so too. You know, truthfully, if it were mine, what I would do is I would not try to put Windows on it. I would get a copy of Linux designed. How much RAM is in that machine?
2 gigs.
Yeah. So you get one of the Linuxes that is designed for lower RAM, smaller CPUs, perhaps Lubuntu or Xubuntu. These are lightweight versions of Ubuntu.
Okay.
And frankly, it's free. You're not going to have any activation issues. It's going to run 10 times better. It's being kept up to date, so you don't have to worry about security. Linux is more secure anyway. What apps do you use on that?
Well, nothing special. It's just been a great machine. It's an IBM ThinkPad.
That's the original ThinkPad. Yeah, you got. I don't blame you for not wanting to throw it out. It will be a superb Linux machine. ThinkPads make great Linux machines.
Okay.
So, I don't know if you've ever used Linux, but
I never have.
It's close enough, in my opinion, to Windows that you won't have any problem. You can get Firefox or Chrome on it. So you'll be using the modern browsers, which you won't be, by the way, on XP. Neither Firefox has just ended its support for XP. Chrome did a while ago. And the latest Internet Explorer on XP is 8, which is actually dangerous to use.
Right.
But you'll be getting up-to-date browsers.
Uh-huh.
If you the email, you can use Thunderbird or other email packages. They're modern. They're secure. I think if Linux is not – don't be intimidated by it. It's very – easy to use, and when you're putting Linux on a ThinkPad, it's a perfect match, and you'll be using an up-to-date version of Linux as opposed to a almost 20-year-old version of Windows.
That sounds good. I'll give that a try.
Yeah, I think you'd be better off. And then if you really can't stand it, be very careful, because you just, you know, buyer beware on eBay, and it won't be expensive to get XP, but the expense, the risk is of not getting a legitimate copy that you can use, or worse, getting one with malware on it.
And other than getting the actual CD, there won't be any legit sources online to get that you know of?
No, nobody sells it legitimately. Microsoft won't let them.
I see.
I wonder if you could go... Wonder if you could go to Lenovo and say, "Hey, can I get a recovery disc for my my old ThinkPad?" I don't blame you for wanting to keep it. It's so IBM sold its ThinkPad business to a Chinese company called Lenovo. The good news is they did keep the team that made the ThinkPad in the U.S. and they continue to design ThinkPads. And so Lenovo has been fairly true to the ThinkPad brand, but nothing beats, you know, that original ThinkPad. That thing is a truck. I think you'd be so much better off using Linux on that thing. And the nice thing is Linux is well supported on ThinkPads because that is the laptop of choice of many geeks. It's that good. So you'll have very little trouble getting it to work. Modern Linux really is not your grandpa's or your dad's Linux. It is, or even mine. It is, and since I'm your dad's age, that's not saying much. It is very easy to install on a wide variety of hardware. The days of having to, you know, mess with your xconfig, your xf config, have long gone. It works out of the box in many cases. And I think Ubuntu has done a very good job. Big change there if you're a Linux fan. Mark Shuttleworth, who is the millionaire who financed Ubuntu. Linux, I should explain, really isn't Linux. There's the thing that is Linux is a tiny little part of it, the kernel, the very lowest level part of the operating system, which was created by a Finnish graduate student named Linus Torvalds in 1992, many moons ago. And he did an interesting thing. He gave away the source code. He kept the trademark, so he controls what is Linux and what isn't, which is, I think, a very good move. But he didn't own it. He invited others to work with it, to develop it, and as a result, it's really matured beautifully in the internet era. And then companies have come along, or groups, really many cases, just communities have come along and said, all right, we're going to take this kernel and add this software and this installer and this, you know, the support structure around it and make a true operating system. So there, and these are called distributions. So there are many, many distributions of Linux. There's community-run distributions like Debian, which is one of my favorites. That's been around almost as long as Linux has been around. In fact, you can tell because it's named after its creator and his wife, Deborah and Ian, Debian. Ian, it's sad to say, passed away very recently. But because it's a vibrant and growing and powerful and really good community, Debian continues to grow without them in a beautiful way. So that's there's no profit. It's not, don't sell it. It's completely non-profit. There are other versions of Linux that are even geekier. Debian, though, Mark Shuttleworth, who was an internet millionaire, said, I'm going to take Debian and make it more like Windows, more user-friendly. And he created Ubuntu. So he took the Debian distribution and polished it even more, in his opinion, to make Ubuntu, which is Swahili for all of us together or something like that, and created a company. Now, that's a business. And they make their money in support, in sales, but they give it away. They give it away. In fact, very famously for years, they would send you a DVD with Linux on it for free. That really kind of powered the success of Ubuntu. And there are Ubuntu flavors, like, as I mentioned, Xubuntu and Elubuntu, that are designed for lower-end hardware. There are many flavors of Ubuntu. There's Edubuntu, which is designed for educators. And that's what's beautiful about this Linux community is you can piggyback on others' work freely. That's part of the deal, the agreement. In any event, Ubuntu is probably the easiest for in Linux novices to use because it does it all for you. Mark Shuttleworth, I was starting to tell this news story, but I've run out of time. Mark Shuttleworth is starting to run out of money, and so they're cutting back a little bit of Ubuntu, but it's still a great operation. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, that's right. Android is a Linux distro. Shuttleworth, it's estimated, spent half a billion dollars on the Unity desktop. They wanted to have their own desktop and convergence. And they're running out of money. So he's going back in as CEO. He had let somebody else run it. And they're killing the Unity project. They're abandoning it. I imagine it will continue to develop as an open source project, but it won't be under Ubuntu. And they're returning to their roots, which is the GNOME desktop, which I actually really like. But that's, you know, that's kind of mature and freely available and developed by a community. GNOME 3 is fantastic, but The nice thing is, Keith, you don't have to use the GNOME desktop. You can use XFCE if you want something lightweight. That's what a Xubuntu uses. You can use Enlightenment, which is really lightweight. You can use, and was very popular for a while. You can use KDE. There's, you know, kind of an infinite choice. And with Ubuntu, you just install it with whatever desktop you want. But actually, I'm using GNOME here. I like GNOME. I guess the complaint about GNOME is it's heavyweight. That doesn't bother me. So here's Chromium. This is, you know, the Chrome browser, the open source version of it, running under GNOME. You know, it has, you know, you can put them in. I have it set up this way because this is kind of how I like it, but you can put this dock anywhere. This is actually an extension called Dash to Dock. You can have menus, kind of Windows styles menus. You can have, you know, and if you want to browse downloads, you know, this is the File Explorer. It's very Windows-like. You know, I don't think anybody using Windows would have a hard time understanding this. These are GNOME extensions. This is the GNOME bar at the top here. It has workspaces. So I have different workspaces here that I can go to. This is my desktop wallpaper changer, which I like. This is accessibility. You know, you have your Wi-Fi picker and all of that stuff. I mean, it's just like any, really, it's very much like Windows. You have to just get used to the fact that, you know, buttons may be in a different position and so forth. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. Linux is, I think, often thought of as, well, that's, now you're really geeky. You know, it's mainstream as Windows, and maybe if you want to be really a hippie, you could use Mac OS. But many people are using Linux without knowing it. If you're using an Android phone, that's built on Linux. If you're using, almost all the websites, or at least I would say more than half of the websites you visit on the internet are running on Linux. So you use it every day. And I think it's a fairly, maybe this is a controversial opinion, but I think it's a fairly good choice for almost anybody as a desktop operating system. The nice thing is, there's a massive community around it. So there's many, many, there's a lot of choice. A lot of choice in terms of how it looks, how it works. And you're going to get, you know, one of the reasons there's choice is that geeks just can't seem to agree on anything. And so everybody makes their own version. But that's nice. That's a good choice. It's good. David, Palm Beach, Florida, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, David.
Afternoon, OM, and to H-Y-C here.
W6TWT, good to talk to you.
I know. You would think, having had my ticket for 57 years, that I'd be able to answer this, but I'm coming hat in hand to the master.
I am no ham expert. We're talking amateur radio here. Go ahead, though. I'll do what I can to help you.
I've got three computers, two TVs, and I used Google Voice for my VoIP.
Okay.
A managed switch, network switch, or an unmanaged? Is getting a managed switch, because what I read was that perhaps I should be using a managed switch and making my VoIP.
Well, all right, here's the difference. So it's really, you know, networking is a high-end, high-level technical topic. Used to be, I mean, this was, you had an IT guy. You had a guy trained in this to do the network. But now, because of the internet, and everybody wants to use multiple devices on their home internet connection, suddenly we're IT guys. We've got routers and switches and all these really fairly arcane network devices in our home, and we're expected to manage them. So I'll tell you why they're saying get a managed switch. And I'll explain what first of all, you all know what a router is. Almost everybody has one in their house. In its very basic use, it allows multiple devices to use one internet address by routing the traffic. So when you on your laptop, make a request for a website, goes through the router. The router says, oh, okay, the laptop wants a packet from this website. And when the website responds, it routes it to the laptop. The laptop has its own internal address. So that's at its very base what a router does. It has some other advantages, and many routers have additional capabilities. In fact, the thing they're talking about with your VoIP, your router probably can do with something called QoS, or quality of service. What people are talking about when they say this to you is that you may want to prioritize packets for your phone calls, because that has to be done in real time compared to a web browser or email, which can be, you know, packets can arrive out of order and not in real time, because you're just building a web page and a little delay there is no big deal. Delay on a phone line is very annoying. So that's called QoS, and many routers will do this. A switch comes off of a router. You still need a router. Switch doesn't do any routing, but it allows packets to be it allows you to create subnetworks, networks that are switched so that the router says, oh, okay, that laptop is on that switch. The switch will make sure that the packet goes to the right place. It reduces traffic on the network. A managed switch just has software in it that lets you do even more. Run network protocols like SNMP, which is the Simple Network Management Protocol. It allows you to control the LAN, to create virtual LANs or VLANs, to monitor the network. Most people do not need a managed switch. They're more expensive, and the capabilities of a managed switch probably are not necessary. However, if you want to become a network guru, go out and get a managed switch. And then you could put your VoIP on that managed switch, and you could use, you know, you could set up rules that would, you know, prefer VoIP and route traffic more intelligently, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know what I'd recommend? And since you're a ham, you'll be comfortable with this. It's very, you know, sophisticated, but it's cheap. $50. It's a router with very sophisticated management software from a company called Ubiquiti. It's called their Edge Router X. It's a 5-port router and switch. And the Ubiquiti software in there lets you do all sorts of things, including VLANs. It supports SNMP. You can do QoS. For $50, that's a powerhouse. So if you really feel the need, I would guess what this is coming from is that your Google Voice isn't working great. You're getting hesitation or things like that.
It is. I mean, I'm talking to you on it right
Sounds
now.
Great. You get occasional latency or dropouts?
But, you know, Murphy's Law says that one day I'm going to have a problem like this because the computers and the
TV. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it works great until somebody else is watching Netflix in the other room.
Yeah.
Right? Well, and then all of a sudden.
I have two cats, and they're not allowed to watch TV.
Oh, okay. You're safe. If you're the only person using your Wi-Fi, don't worry about it. You control QoS by not having other stuff running in the background.
Yeah, I see. Very good. Listen, I really appreciate the help. And after the show closes, would you proxy an 88 to to Heather, please?
I will. And a 73 to you, too, my friends. Good to talk to you, David. Thank you. I'll proxy her an 88 right now. I mean, it's funny how we get so, you know, networking is a very deep subject with a lot of voodoo and black magic involved, and a really good sysadmin and network administrator. Man, these guys are six-figure guys, they and gals. They are, you know, the backbone of your operation. And then we're expected to go home and for $1.50 an hour, whatever you pay yourself, figure this stuff out. I've sent people before to a website called practicallynetworked.com. That's a good, got a lot of tutorials about how all this stuff works. Maybe will be, you know, interesting. The problem is the time you don't want to have to do this is when it's on the line, you know, when your spouse is saying, the internet's down. What did you do this time, Leo? Oh, I'm not talking about myself. Oh, yes, I am. What did you do this time, Leo? So that's when you don't, that's, then the pressure's on. The Niners game starts in 5 minutes. What did you do this time, Leo? So my suggestion is get a system that works and stick with it. 8888, Ask Leo. That's the phone number. And I'd love to hear from you. Our website, where we put all this stuff, and I'll put some links in here for your edification, techguylabs.com. And we'll make that EdgeRouter X our product of the week. I think we've done it before, but it's real. For $50, it's amazing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. What did you do this time? I'm sorry, Lisa. I feel sorry for my family because they always end up being part of the show. That's not very nice. That's not fair to them. But that's my life. It's my life. And she's not like that. She's very kind. She's very understanding. She's a geek, so she gets it. Johnny Cash welcomes Johnny Jett, our traveling man. Hello, Johnny.
Hello.
I couldn't remember if you were here. For some reason, I thought you were here tomorrow.
No, I just got back into town.
All right. Where were you? Detroit?
No, you like Detroit.
I keep putting you in Detroit. Chicago?
I've traveled a lot the last
Minnetonka?
10 days. I've been in the East Coast. I've been in New York twice in the last week.
Wow.
In Philadelphia.
Wait a minute. You went and you came back, and then you went and you came back?
I did.
Wow. No wonder you have all those frequent flyer miles.
Yes.
That's awesome.
It's tiring, but, you know, I get the miles. I get my elite status, which is very key because I get free upgrades. And doing that trip on a lie-flat seat makes it so much easier than in the back of the bus.
Johnny is our travel guru. And you might say, well, why do you have a travel guru on a technology show? Well, because technology is completely changing how we travel. And Johnny talks about apps and websites. Of course, he's got his own johnnyjett.com, which is well worth reading just for the articles. I read it for the articles, Johnny. But he's got the free newsletter, the free travel search stuff.
It's the tips and deals that people like the most.
Tips and deals. Yeah. How many newsletters do you have?
I have three. I have a daily travel tip, and I have a deals newsletter. So whenever there's really good deals, and there's always good deals going on, you just got to be flexible. And a weekly newsletter where I talk about apps and websites and stuff I'm going to talk about today.
This being a travel guru, this is not easy. This is hard work. This guy works really hard.
I work on the planes the whole time, so I really hope that electronic ban doesn't come to America.
Boy, that would be bad. That would be really bad.
That would be my travels would slow down completely.
You know what I'm really worried about? And the president's talked about this extreme vetting, which is not yet the rule, but I fear that it will be, that requires people coming into the United States to, I don't know if everybody will be asked for, but if they're asked to turn over their social media passwords and their contact list and answer political questionnaire. And I fear that this will really hamper tourism in the U.S. I also fear, and I think we talked about this last week, retaliation on the other side. I like to travel. I love to travel. And but I'd be very reluctant to travel outside the U.S. if I have to give up my passwords. That's not good. I mean, I guess you change them immediately after you give them up, but.
And people are going to have fake handles, too. You know, they're going to have ones that
I don't think this is – if you're a bad guy, you're – come on. Of course you're not going to give the Customs and Border Patrol your Twitter password where you say, you know, let's take over the U.S. You're not going to give them that. You're going to give them some dummy Twitter account. Yes. So I don't even understand how this helps, to be honest. All right.
I don't either. But I don't want to get political because I'll get all kinds of crazy emails like I do.
This is about travel. I'm hoping that they're just floating this. It was a campaign promise. I hope they're not serious about it. It will be devastating to our economy.
I don't see how it's
going
to happen because it won't work. That would not work.
It's neither useful nor, it's not effective and it's a bad policy. But that's, I'll get political. It's a bad policy. So
it is bad. It is bad policy.
But people who listen to the show have social media accounts. We're very technically literate. We have phones. My phone has my life on it. I'm not giving that up to somebody I don't know. That seems like a bad idea.
Well, they have the right to go through computers.
No, I know it's legal. I'm not saying it's illegal. I'm just saying it's bad policy.
It is. Yeah. So. But if you're traveling with stuff on your computer that you do not want people to see, you know, fortunately, they never asked me or I don't know any of my friends.
That's the thing. I think it's selectively I hope it'll be selectively implemented.
Yeah, but it would take a long time.
But you never know. Is it going to be me next time? And you know, you don't lie. That's the other thing. We say that over and over. We're not suggesting you lie to the Border Patrol. That's not a good idea.
No, they don't want to do that.
Nope.
You don't want to do that.
So leave your phone at home, I guess. But that doesn't mean they can't ask you, okay, fine, you don't have your phone, but I want to see your Twitter handle. I want to know, give me your password to your Twitter account and your Facebook account. I want to see what you're posting.
Yeah. Well, the bad guys usually have two accounts.
Maybe it doesn't stop bad guys. None of this stuff ever stops bad guys.
Yeah.
I guess it stops casual bad guys. Guys being thinking about being a bad guy. I don't know who it stops.
Dumb bad guys.
I remember talking to the Secret Service years ago, and they said most bad guys are actually dumb. So we don't really need these techniques. In most cases, we just ask them, and they tell you. All right, what do you got for us today?
I always do an app, a website, and a tip. So this week I was in last weekend I was in Dallas speaking at the show, and there was a tornado warning on the weather.
You know, every time I go to Dallas to Love Field, they've got you go in the men's room. It says tornado shelter. It makes me nervous. Yeah.
Same with Denver, too.
Do I have to live in the bathroom?
Well, so download this app. It's from the Red Cross. It's called Tornado, and it's free on iOS and Android. And actually, one of my local friends who lives in Dallas says actually every Texan has it. I don't know if that's true.
If I lived in tornado country.
So if there's ever a tornado, a loud warning goes off on your phone to alert you so you know to take cover. So
That's useful.
What you really want it for, right then and there. Wake up in the middle of the night, and you know right to dart. But it has all other kinds of useful things, including a map with Red Cross shelters.
This is great.
You know, how to assemble an emergency kit, how to practice an emergency plan. There's quizzes. There's an I'm safe notification. And there's a strobe light. So God forbid you're in a place where they can't find you, this will help them find you. And also audible alert functions.
Really good idea. So,
yeah, it's free. This is something you hope you'll never use, but you know what? Why not download it? And in case you're going down to Texas or you live down there or any tornado alleys.
Tornado. It's by the American Red Cross. They have a number of apps, but that's a good one.
They have tons of apps. Yeah.
Isn't that great? They've discovered, and it's iOS, Android, iPad. This is a really great tool. What a good idea.
Yeah. Have you heard of that one or did you have
it? No.
Okay, good.
No.
That's what I like.
And I go to Denver a lot because my son's in school there. And in fact, I'm going to be there in May.
I actually had to circle over Denver because there was a tornado below us.
Wow.
And they actually started diverting us to Colorado Springs. And we were almost about to land in Colorado Springs. And they said, you know what? They just opened up Denver. So we did another U-turn.
Wow.
And landed in Denver. And that is no fun, circling in bumpy air.
Yeah. All right. What else you got for us?
I got a website. So this one's called liveatc.net, and actually one of your readers or viewers in the chat room recommended it.
We were talking about Channel 9 on United and how much I enjoy listening to air traffic control.
So this – you'll love this then. This has been around for a while. It's real basic, but there's a world map, so you can click different airports. You can listen to live or recorded air traffic control.
I love it.
And remember that video I showed you a couple weeks ago where the guy just videos the whole flight?
That's probably where he gets the
that's exactly where he gets it. So I was trying to figure out how he put the live ATC to it. And now we know.
That's really neat.
And it's also an app. But, it's pretty cool. You can listen to it all different things. I think it started with Boston's Logan Airport, but now it's all over.
Neat.
And do we have time for a tip or no?
Sure, tip. We got 40 seconds. That's time for a tip.
So, the last couple of weeks, I've been in hotel rooms that all have connecting room doors. And one of my tips that I keep forgetting to do myself is that when you check in, ask for a room that does not have a connecting room door unless you're traveling with a group.
Right. I agree with you.
Because these doors are paper thin.
Yeah.
And last week, I could hear everything.
You can hear them talking in a normal voice. You can hear what they're saying. It's like you've bugged the room.
But you also got to make sure that the room door is locked. Sometimes it's not.
And lock it.
And I discovered that. They could have come right in and grabbed my stuff.
JohnnyJet.com. That's our boy, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I agree with you 100%. And I've also checked into rooms where the door is unlocked.
Yeah.
It's not unusual.
I did a little video. I said, look, this thing was unlocked. They could have easily come in. I would have never known. Grab my stuff, and they'd be like, we have no idea what happened.
So one of our visitors Rod, who is a motorcycle guy. What's this called? Weather Puppy? What was that app that you... Weather Puppy. Look at the puppy and the Weather Puppy in Petaluma today. That looks like a King Charles Spaniel.
That's what I recommended a few weeks ago.
Yeah, that's one of Johnny's apps.
Oh, good. That's nice. The kitten. There's a kitten one, too.
So Rod knows. Rod knows. Rod listens.
Awesome.
Great. Look at the Weather Puppy.
I actually met a lot of people at these travel shows that came up to me and said, you know, I listen to you on Leo every week.
Nice.
And actually, the person who recommended this tornado is one of them. I had dinner with them. They're a blind couple that live in Texas, and they're amazing. And I'm going to feature his website when it's up and running strong. But
nice,
really incredible people. They travel the world.
It is one of the blessings of what we do is that it's just you feel like you've got a community everywhere you go. There's people around. You know,
it's really, really nice.
Yeah.
So thank you for having me on.
Hey, Johnny, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Melting the world with technology since 1994. 8888-ASK-LEO, the number 888-827-5536. I've mentioned several times, I'll mention it again, our website. If you hear a link, if I mention something, if Johnny mentions something, it all goes there, techguylabs.com. We also put all the video and audio from every show there, and it is not a subscription site. It is free. We don't have to charge you. We've got great advertisers. Thank you very much. They pay the freight here. Steve in San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Leo. I had a question regarding, I'm considering buying a new AV receiver. There's a website that offers factory refurbished Yamaha and Denon receivers.
Sounds great.
What experience do you have with factory refurbished stereo equipment?
I have mixed feelings about factory refurbished, but I'll explain the rules. This will help you make a decision.
Thank you.
Generally, I say for computing devices, anything with a moving part of any kind or anything super complex, get it from the original manufacturer with the full warranty and you're okay. Because what usually that means, for instance, Apple and Dell both have refurbed outlet stores. Generally, what that means is, for a while, until maybe 10 years ago, companies would, if you bought something from Dell and returned it, they would just package it up again and sell it as new. State of California sued and said you can't sell it as new. So they are no longer able to sell open box stuff as new, even if it was never used or never switched on. Once somebody has it and it sends it back, it's not new. They refurbish it and sell it. In many cases, that is new. It's as good as new, but you get a few hundred dollars off. And that's why buying it from the manufacturer with the full warranty, current model, usually means you're in good shape. If it's much older, if it's not from the manufacturer, it's a little riskier. A big computer store, of my knowledge, claimed to refurbish hard drives. You can't refurbish a hard drive. What, do they open it up and fix it up? No. So you could see anything with moving parts I'd worry about. Now, an AV receiver has no moving parts. They're all solid state. Refurbishing them would be, mostly polishing up the front piece, making sure everything worked, because they don't break.
Right.
So as long as it's from a reputable company and they're offering a warranty of, what is the warranty they're offering?
It's 18 months, I guess.
Oh, that's
the brand new ones.
That's great.
3 years.
That's fine. If it's not good, it's going to fail certainly in the first year.
Right.
So I think because AV receivers, if it were a tube receiver, then I would say no. But because they're solid state now, nothing inside there is going to fail.
Very good.
As long as it works, if a fuse gets blown. I've blown the HDMI channel on some AV receivers, both Onkyo and Denon, because I had a bad Apple TV that I believe that was short-circuiting the HDMI. And those things, they're not usable. They're fine receivers, but you can't do the HDMI thing, which is the main thing. So, but if it works, it's going to work forever.
Very good.
Go for it. How much do you save?
Probably about over $300.
Yeah, that's a lot. These devices can be very expensive, and that way you can get a little bit more of a device for the same price, right, or save some money. Is it what's the company that's doing the refurb?
Well, as I understand, Yamaha is doing the it's a factory refurbished from Yamaha.
You're golden.
The website is called, if you want me to.
Sure, if you don't mind.
It's called accessoriesforless.com.
Okay. And you know, the advantage of you saying that out loud, besides the fact that now they're going to be swamped, so you better get over there and buy what you want, is that if anybody's had problems with them, we'll know, because they'll call in or they'll mention in the chat or on the website.
Right.
Hey, no, that sounds great, especially if it's factory refurbished. You're golden.
Very good. Yep. All right. I appreciate your help. Thanks.
My pleasure. It's a matter of trust, right? That's why when you buy it from Apple or Dell, you could trust them because they're not going to, you know, damage their reputation. When you're buying it for, you know, a site called Computers for Less, you know, I don't know. See if they've been around for a while, if they have happy customers, you know, search the net to see if anybody's complaining. Remembering, though, that there's no company in the world that somebody's not complaining about, right? The internet is a complaint machine. So you have to, one complaint is not enough. Everybody has a failure once in a while. What you want to look for is a pattern, right? A lot of unhappy customers, a dearth of happy customers, that kind of thing. A computer in our chat room says Accessories for Less is legit. People on AVS forums swear by them. I bought a refurbished speaker from them, which is even a little more risky, but they are an authorized refurbished dealer. That's what you want. If Yamaha trusts them, that's a really good sign. So there you go. Unsolicited recommendation for Accessories for Less. I'm going to have to check them out. Angelo Rancho Cucamonga, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Angelo.
How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Well, I'm doing okay. I've had a problem for like 2.5 years, but I'm pretty, you know, almost used to it right now.
And, I'm hoping it's a technical problem, not a personal problem.
No. Very, very technical. And I'm hoping, I mean.
You know, isn't it funny how we put up with stuff? It's annoying. Yeah. It's annoying, but I can live with it. And then 3 years later, you're still living with it.
I like your little term that you just used a half minute ago about a dearth of unhappy customers or something.
Yes.
that was pretty slick. I like that.
A plethora of happy customers and a dearth of unhappy customers. I like to use big words once in a while.
Yeah. They sound nice.
Thank you. So what's driving you crazy? It's been driving you crazy for a year.
2.5 years.
2.5 years.
Yeah, and while I was on hold, I put everything on. I wrote it down on a timeline, and it's really quick, but it helps, you know. I bought a Toshiba laptop in 2013, and I'm really impressed with the Toshiba brand, by the way. That's off topic. But anyway, I bought the Office 365, and I migrated away from Carbonite onto the OneDrive because it came with the Office 365.
You get a terabyte. At the time, you got unlimited storage. They cut that back to a terabyte, I think.
Right. And, you know, it's still, I'm happy with it.
But a terabyte's more than anybody needs. That's plenty.
So this is a new computer, and I populated the OneDrive with all the data I wanted.
Okay.
Life is great. And
yes.
Then there's a little switch that says enable, and then it starts to back it up on the cloud. All right, and it worked like it was supposed to. So then I got really slick because I'm a contractor, and I bought a second PC, a little Lenovo laptop, which also impressed me.
You know what? I'm going to run out of time because we're up against the news. So hang on, okay? We'll finish the saga, the timeline, in just a minute, okay? I apologize. Sure. Yeah. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the website, techguylabs.com. We break for news. At the top of the hour, we will be back with more tales of woe and, I hope, a dearth of unhappy customers right after this. Ooh, I will pre-order that. All right, sorry, I'm back. Apologize for that. So,
I'm back with you?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Want me to keep going?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're not on the radio. We're on the podcast, and I will, you know, when we get back on the radio, because it's going to be 7 minutes, but when we get back on the radio, I'll recapitulate.
I'll be done in 30 seconds.
Okay, good.
I bought a second Lenovo laptop with a tiny SSD drive, you know,
mm-hmm.
And I wanted to run around. I had this vision. I could run around to my job sites and have all my data.
Yeah.
So
wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. And so I signed in with the Microsoft thing into this new PC, and then it wanted me to enable OneDrive so I could get my OneDrive. Okay, you know, the data. Okay, great. Then OneDrive on my Toshiba, that's my workhorse, my main primary PC, instantly it starts deleting all my files.
What?
Exactly. I caught it, and luckily I had backed it up, but I did lose some stuff.
So this is the difference between backup and synchronization. You're learning this firsthand.
Well, I lost a little, but life didn't end. Okay, great. So I called Microsoft support on the internet, and at least 30 times they remotely accessed my computer with their offshore Microsoft techs.
Yeah.
And nothing ever came of this. They always want to reformat the hard drive or something like that.
Oh, God.
So I bought into the Assure plan for $150. I actually got a refund because they said, we can't fix this. We don't know what's going on.
Oy.
So each of those 30 calls, by the way, was like 4 or 5 hours at a time, you know?
Oh, Lord.
So I made an appointment to the Microsoft store. I drove this extended distance to get there because there's not one close to me. Spent the entire day there, and these guys were huddled around my PC making phone calls and everything, and then they give it back to me.
And, you're calling me?
And I was hoping that someone from Microsoft would hear this and say, I can help you. And then
just in a nutshell, is the problem still that if you use OneDrive, it deletes the stuff instead of backing it up?
Exactly. And it deletes it on my PC. And one of the suggestions says, and I've never put anything on the Lenovo, but one of the suggestions was delete everything on OneDrive.com and start from scratch. So I did. And then you press the enable button, and instantly it starts deleting everything on my PC. And I'm ready for this. I've already got the backups all synced, and so I just have to restore everything.
This is, by the way, the reason they don't bill OneDrive as a backup. It's not a backup solution.
I'm still searching for a backup solution.
Well, I tell you about Carbonite. So but you can try other things. So synchronization is designed to match two folders or two hard drives, to make them equal. For some reason, I don't know. What I can't solve is I'm not sure why OneDrive is trying to – what it's trying to do is synchronize your Toshiba with a blank drive. Why it's doing that is – you know, whether it's a settings issue or something. But that's the point of synchronization. It's not a good choice for backup because it will synchronize deletes as well as copy files. What you want is a solution that does not specifically excludes synchronizing deletions. You want something that will copy what's on the Toshiba. And if you delete something on the Toshiba, it doesn't delete it on the copy. The copy is an aggregate of everything that's ever been on the Toshiba. That's a backup. A synchronization is, you know, I've got a folder on the Toshiba. And I do this, by the way. I use my own network-attached storage to do this. I use a Synology. But I have a common documents folder that is on all my hardware. And, I have many laptops and desktops.
I'd love to see this.
This is the way you want it, right? This is what you're looking for. But this, I think, OneDrive is not not the proper solution for this. But the idea being that when I set up a new computer, I log into my network attached storage. It's called Synology. I log in and I add the Synology client to that computer. Log in and then say, "Yeah, my documents folder is now the documents folder in Synology."
And can you spell that?
Synology. It's a network-attached storage. Almost any NAS will do this, but Synology is the best. It's pricey, but you don't have to pay a monthly fee. You just buy it. And then what? Because this, I understand that's what you want. You want to have a central repository of data that is the same everywhere.
I got this Western Digital RAID 2 hard drive.
Yeah, it's supposed to do the same thing, right? That's the MyBook. Yeah.
I just wanted redundancy because
the Synology does that. You can get a two-drive Synology. If you can afford it, get a five-drive Synology. Then you have double data redundancy. Any two drives can fail and you don't lose any data. You have massive storage. You have, I mean, you probably don't need 10 terabytes, but you'd have that.
While I have you, Carbonite, I had to use it, and I was a loyal fan for years because of you, but I had to use it once, and it took me almost an entire year to populate my PC.
I know. I don't recommend Carbonite for massive amounts of data, but I wish you had called them because they'll send you a hard drive.
You're kidding.
No. It's a fee because they understand. I mean, they're limited by their bandwidth, and they don't want to take up all your bandwidth.
I would have bought it.
How much data was it? It must have been hundreds of gigabytes or a terabyte, right? It was a lot of data.
Yeah, it was like 400 gigabytes.
Yeah. So, yeah, they'll send you a hard drive. And the point being mostly that you've got it all backed up. Carbonite. There's a kind of backup called high availability where it's you get back up and running fast, and they offer that, but that's more expensive than the generic consumer version of Carbonite. But if you call them up and you say, I need my data now, send me a hard drive with my data, they'll do that, and you'll get it tomorrow.
I called them, and they gave me this, how much bandwidth and an equation saying it's going to take this many months, and we can't.
But this is, I think people don't, when they're thinking about online backup, they don't do the math that it can only back up at a certain rate. It doesn't want to take up all your bandwidth. It can only restore at a certain rate. It should restore, three or four times faster than it took to back up. But the backup happens kind of in the background. You're not aware of it.
Can I ask you one more thing while
yeah.
we're on break?
Yeah.
With my WD. My cloud thing, the RAID device.
Yeah.
You have to go through the internet to access the data. Okay, great. But this thing keeps revisions upon revisions upon revisions, and it's like trying to wade through.
I know.
A lot of. So is there something that like a software where if it's here, I want it here, and that's it.
You could go in the settings and say, don't do versioning. It's doing versioning. You can tell it to not do versioning. The reason you like versioning is because people change documents and then go, oh, rats, I wish I had the previous version. And for ransomware, versioning can save your butt because if you get encrypted files, often those will be backed up. But if you can go back to the previous unencrypted version, you're golden. So versioning is good, but you're right. It can use a massive amount of data, but it also can make life hell. Time Machine on the Mac was an attempt to make this easier to use. It does versioning, and it has this big graphical display to make it easy to understand what's going on. I don't know what to do on Windows, though. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about, let's see, computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, virtual reality, augmented reality, smart cars, driving cars, TVs that are smart, hacking, security, privacy, anything I left out? Yeah, probably a lot. Anything with a chip in it, anything with technology. Phone number 8888-ASK, Leo, 888-827-5536. I continue to talk to Angelo off the air to help him out. In a nutshell, he was using OneDrive. But OneDrive was not synchronizing his files. He wanted something a lot of people have, something I actually have set up, and it's very useful. And if you have multiple computers, I think many people would want this. It's a solution for people who have a laptop, a desktop, a computer at work, maybe a mobile device or two, and you'd like to have a set of data, your documents, that's there available for all of them. That if you modify on one of them, it synchronizes to all of them. And that's kind of the premise of OneDrive or Dropbox. In Dropbox, much like OneDrive, you have a OneDrive folder, Dropbox folder. And anything you put in that folder is automatically copied to the cloud, to OneDrive or Dropbox. And you can have that folder on other systems as well. So now you have multiple copies of files. If you change it, it changes. Somehow his OneDrive, this is really frustrating. It's been going on for a couple of years, right? Somehow his OneDrive got the notion that the official version of that folder was empty. That's your worst nightmare, right? What you want is and this is what Microsoft told him, it didn't work. What you want is OneDrive, the cloud, to have the official version with all the files, and then it synchronizes to all of your computers. Somehow, OneDrive got the notion, oh, there's nothing in this folder. And then when he logged in with his Toshiba, it saw that folder with a lot of stuff, and instead of copying the stuff, it started deleting it. It said, no, the official version is empty. That's kind of the worst possible scenario, but it's not. Believe it or not, this is not unusual. This does happen. Microsoft's advice to him, which I don't know why, but didn't work. Maybe there's a settings thing or something, is to erase the OneDrive. Make the OneDrive, blank, or, just start over with OneDrive. Drag, copy, not synchronize, but copy everything from the folder that you want it to be the definitive folder onto OneDrive. Now, that OneDrive cloud-based folder, or Dropbox, this is the same advice for any synchronization system, is the official version. And you can verify that by taking a new machine, signing up for OneDrive, logging in and saying, yes, here's my OneDrive folder, and you should watch it copy everything that's in the cloud to that new machine. Now we know. Good. We've got two copies, which is a good sign. Probably three. With the originals, the OneDrive, and the new machine. Then, and only then, log on with an old machine and make sure that that's how it's working. And that should be how it's working. So start with an empty drive, copy everything into it, empty OneDrive, copy everything into it, set up synchronization on your machines, watch it keep those in sync. Remember, though, that unless you tell it not to, it will synchronize deletions. This is where people get in problems. If you delete a folder on your Toshiba or your new machine, if OneDrive sees that, it will delete the folder on the official canonical, we call it, version on OneDrive, the one true version on OneDrive. And that there goes that data. That's gone. It says, well, you deleted it. You didn't want it. That's if you synchronize deletions. So if you want it for backup, make sure you're not synchronizing deletions. The problem with that, and by the way, Angelo has a MyCloud from Western Digital, and he says, I got all these versions of files. Well, yeah, that's when you don't synchronize deletions, right? It'll save every version. You change a file. Instead of deleting the old one and replacing it, it makes a version. That's what you want for backup, because you can go back in time. But it does use a lot of space, and it makes a lot of files. So you want a system that will do that in a rational way. Apple's Time Machine is an example. Apple's Time Machine, in fact, they have a whole big graphical display, and it looks like you're going back in time, and you can go back to previous versions. And they used the graphical interface to kind of explain what's going on and make it clearer. Oh, this is all the files from June 9th. This is all the files from April 7th. This is all the files from February. And you see it's a point in time, and you can go back to that point in time. That makes sense, I think, more to humans. Unfortunately, people who design computers aren't humans. They're engineers. I mentioned to him, and I've mentioned this before, that the solution I ended up doing was making my own cloud with a network-attached storage. The system I use is from a company called Synology, S-Y-N-O-L-O-G-Y. And it can be expensive. It can be very expensive. But then you have your own cloud in a closet somewhere, and you can have all the machines. That's how I do it. I have a definitive directory on the Synology. Whenever I get a new machine, and it happens to me a little more than the average bear, of course, the first thing I do is I put the Synology software on that new machine and say, and now duplicate what's in the cloud, which is great because all my documents are always immediately available to me. It's a pricey way to do it. It's a lot less expensive to pay a monthly fee to Dropbox or OneDrive, but you have to be kind of aware of what you're doing when you configure it. 8888 ask Leo. Hope that helps, Angelo. It's terrible to suffer for years with a computer problem, and we all do it, right? Yeah, I can never use that Y key unless I press the shift button first. Or yeah, I don't know why, but that menu disappeared years ago. I just live. You work around it and you keep going. The reason I say fix it is because it's every time it's going to nudge you a little bit. It's death by a thousand paper cuts. Just a little nudge every time, and it wears you down. It's worth fixing it if you can. But, you know, I know we all do. Live with a computer problem for 2.5 years. Really? Matt in Seattle. Hello, Matt. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know anybody at Microsoft up there?
Yeah. I know. Who isn't from Microsoft?
Microsoft or Boeing, right?
Yeah. Well, I even worked there myself for a while.
There you go. Well, our last caller was hoping somebody from Microsoft would hear about his OneDrive pain and right. volunteer to help. What can I do for you?
Yeah. Well, here's the scenario. I have backed up all of my DVDs, which are old home movies and stuff like that that I've transferred
good.
To DVD.
Good.
And
because you don't want to back up, Harry Met Sally, because that's you can always get that from a stream. I feel bad because I bought DVDs now that I never watch because I have a higher quality stream, and that's only going to get more and more. But anything you made, pictures of the videos of the kids, those you want to absolutely digitize and back up.
Right. Well, these are videos of me as a kid. Yes. So
even more important.
They're gold.
Yeah.
I used iDVD back in the day on my Mac and made wonderful menus, and I even got really clever and I put little Easter eggs in and so forth. Anyway, I've backed them all up to a big hard drive, which is acting as a server, accessible by my Apple TV and my Oppo Blu-ray and everything.
Nice. Yeah.
The problem is they're not playable because what I did is I backed them up as disk images.
Oh, so you have VOB files and VTS files. You have DVD files.
Well, they're .cdr files, but once you double click,
so you have to figure out a way to mount them.
Right, because what I don't want to do is just browse. I want the experience of using a DVD and not the experience of just browsing.
You want the menus and music, the plays, and I understand that. So creating an ISO is basically duplicating the DVD. But in order for that to work, you'd have to have software that mounted it and then played it as if it were a DVD. And there is software that will do that. What do you use to stream the media to your TV? Are you using Kodi or Plex?
I'm not doing it because there's no way to...
Hang on. We've got to take a break.
Yeah.
But I think I understand the problem. I bet you the chat room will have a variety of great solutions right after this. ISO Shah 1 says, So when you're playing it, how are you playing it? Are you just sharing the drive that it's stored on?
Well, again, because I know that there's no way to...
You're not doing it.
The way I want. I'm not doing it. But...
But what would you like to... Tell me how you would like to do it.
Well, I would like there to be an Apple TV app that allows you...
There's your problem right there.
Right. But I also have... I know.
Actually, you can get Plex. You can get Plex on an Apple TV, right?
Yeah, but it doesn't...
Plex on a Roku. So they're saying, VLC will see the ISO and play it as if it's, it'll just say, it's a DVD, and it'll give you the DVD interface and all that stuff. But you don't...
I tried, and I couldn't get that to...
How about... So, Mike B., Plex, will Plex play an ISO file? Yeah. Everybody's saying it should. So now I'm thinking something's wrong with the files you made. Because if you put Plex on your Apple TV, or your Roku, it's on both, and Plex can see the drive where that stuff is stored, or you put a USB drive in or whatever... Plex should see it as a DVD and load it and play it.
Really? Because for one thing, it's our .cd.
Yeah, the CDR is weird because it's not a CD. Uh-oh. Am I having... Is this me or is this our callers?
ISO file.
Oh, you're back. It was clicking out for a minute.
Sorry.
So you do want to have a... So, tell me again. So, you have the ISO file. How do you get it to the Apple TV? Or how would you get it to the Apple TV? Here's what you would want to do, okay? I'll tell you what you'd want to do. You need a Plex server, something that's a media server, right? Usually people use their NAS for that. Kodi can play it, but Plex can't, somebody's saying. Okay, so Kodi, try Kodi, but because can you get Kodi on your Apple TV? Somebody's saying Infuse will do this. So what you need is a media server that will serve the ISO file and a client on your Apple TV or your Roku that will see that over the network and play it back.
I'm assuming I can use my Mac as a server.
Yep. Yep.
So, okay.
But you need to be running software. So you need to get Plex for the Mac or Kodi for the Mac.
Kodi, okay.
So, and VLC, believe it or not, was originally a client-server solution. It's the VideoLAN client. There's a VLC server. So now I'm getting some conflicting chatter from the chat room about whether Plex will play the ISO file, but they say Kodi will, and apparently there is a program for the Apple TV called Infuse. Kodi is XBMC renamed, K-O-D-I.
Yeah, I don't know for sure, but my experience kind of messing around with that kind of stuff was that I ended up getting the list of video files and not
a DVD.
So not to say that things haven't changed or that I missed it, but
yeah, I mean, I understand the issue. Let me look at, here's the Plex. What MP4 continuing? Yeah. It looks like Plex is not going to do it for you. I think you probably want to use Kodi. And I don't know what you do. How does he play back Kodi stuff on the Apple TV? I'm sure there's Kodi for Roku.
And I do have a Roku. I'd just rather not use it. Yeah. Can't stand it.
Yeah. So, apparently, if you have a third or fourth generation Apple TV, you can put Kodi on there. You would need the Kodi server on your Mac.
Okay.
And a Kodi client on your Apple TV. And then there's an article which I will post here from Macworld UK. Leo Laporte, geeking in the free world, on the line from Seattle. Matt, he's got an interesting issue. I think in the future, someday we'll get to the future. Future never gets here, does it? In the future, the way we'll watch stuff is we'll just stream it. We'll stream it from the network, from the internet, and everything we want to watch. But the problem is Matt has childhood videos that he wants to play back, and those won't be available on the network. So how does he play those back? And that this has been solved by the same people who want to play, When Harry Met Sally, that they've ripped to their hard drive. They want to play it back on their Apple TV. So the first thing you want to do, and by the way, that's Matt says he wants to play it on his Apple TV. So the first thing, Matt, you want to do is you want to put KODI on your Apple TV. And we'll put a link in the show notes to an article that explains how to do that. That's the player. And then the player will look out on the network and see a Kodi server. So you'll need somewhere to run the Kodi server. You have a Mac, you could run it on that as long as they're both on the same network. And the Kodi server will have those CDR files that you created. You may need to, they're not ISOs, they're CDRs.
Yeah, but I'm sure I could transfer them.
Yeah, that I'm sure there's some mechanical, you don't want you to re-encode it because that'll degrade it. But if there's, it's probably just a different format and you can re-containerize it to make it an ISO.
Exactly.
But you may need to do that in order for Kodi to see it. But the server will see it as a DVD if it's in the proper format and serve it as a DVD, not as files, but as a DVD to your Apple TV, which will then play it as if it's... Because if you think about it, that's what an Apple TV does when you watch iTunes. You rent a movie, you buy a movie. It's being streamed in some format to the Apple TV that plays it back as if, it's normal. Somebody's telling me that probably the CDR is just an extension difference, that if you change the extension to ISO, it might work. I'd look into that. But that if that works, boy, that's easy. So I think there used to be VLC for the Apple TV, then Apple killed it, and I think it came back. You might look for that as well. But the key is you need a media server that serves the content from the hard drive in a way that the media client on your Apple TV can see it, read it, and play it back. And apparently, they're telling me that Kodi will do that, and you can put Kodi on your Apple TV. So let me know if this works. There seems to be a high level of confidence in the chat room. Oh, sure, there are a few naysayers who say, well, Apple will never let you do that. Actually, I would be one of those if I weren't seeing all these people saying, oh, yeah, you can do that. It's not the kind of thing Apple likes, right? They really want you to buy it on iTunes, even if it's your family videos. Well, is there any way you could... I wonder if you could... Well, you wouldn't be able to store it in these ISO file. I mean, if you just had the raw videos, you could store them and play and share them from your Mac. But you want to see the whole... This is the problem, is that you want to see the menu structure and all that. All right?
Yeah.
Hey, good luck, Matt. I hope it works. Let me know how it works. I trust the chat room. Especially in this particular area, they seem to have a passion for media players and things like that. Kenny's in Springfield, Missouri. Hello, Kenny. Leo Laporte, the tech
guy. Hello, how are you doing?
I'm great, Kenny. How are you?
I'm doing good, doing good. My question was, I wanted to know which good music streaming service was good to get.
Oh, man, there's a lot of competitors, aren't there? Apple's got its Apple Music. Google's got Google Play Music. Amazon's got Amazon Unlimited now, which is, all three of those are very similar products. And then there's independents like Spotify and Tidal and Deezer. There's Pandora. Pandora now has a streaming music service. All of these roughly have the same set of records, because the record labels kind of control this tightly. It's roughly the same 40 million songs. 40 million! It's not everything. Every once in a while, an artist comes along that says, oh, I don't want anybody to be streaming my music. But for the most part, everybody's there, except for the most obscure stuff. 40 million songs. They're all roughly $10 a month. Sometimes you get it less. If you have an Amazon Echo, for instance, Amazon will sell you for $4 or $5 a month access to Amazon Unlimited, only on that one Echo, though, which is kind of limited.
Yeah, that's what
you don't want that. Yeah. Mostly the differences are kind of user interface, kind of features like, can you make playlists? Can people share playlists? Spotify is famous because every Monday they put out a playlist called Discover Weekly that's based on what you've listened to in the past with newer music you might be interested in. That's pretty nice. Pandora's claim to fame is, well, we use the Music Genome Project, so we know if you like this, you'll probably like that, and so we can make better automated playlists for you. Apple has a lot of exclusives. You know, that's one way a lot of people like Tidal and Apple try to make it. Some of them, like Tidal and Deezer, offer uncompressed music. If you have enough bandwidth, it won't be an MP3 or an AAC. It'll be an uncompressed, you know, CD quality music. I don't ever notice the difference, by the way, but they claim there's a difference. So,
well, I have an iPhone, an Apple TV, and a Roku.
The only thing Apple Music won't work on, of course, is the Roku. It'll work on all the other devices. Spotify will work on all of those. I think Spotify's the biggest right now. They have 40 or 50 million subscribers. They seem to be going strong. I worry because unlike Apple, Microsoft also has Groove. I forgot Microsoft. But unlike Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, and Google, Spotify has to make its living, and Pandora and Teaser and Tidal have to make their living on their business alone. You know, Apple, Google, Microsoft, and Amazon can lose money on the music service, and they'll still be around because it sells hardware. Well, in Apple's case, it sells hardware, right? It's good for business. So you can try all of these for free. It's kind of a pain in the butt, but I would pick a couple. There isn't a whole lot to I'll be honest. There's not a whole lot to distinguish them. The number one choice is Spotify. It is available on all the platforms you just mentioned. So I would certainly give Spotify a try. See if it's got the music you want. See if you like the user interface. See if the playlist feature is good. The next choice probably for you would be Apple TV. Won't play on the Roku. I used to be a longtime Spotify user, and I just canceled because I had so many subscriptions. I decided, well, something's got to go. I have Google and Amazon Unlimited, and I like them both. They're very similar. Amazon's newer and probably doesn't have as many good playlists. Google has some interesting, as you would expect from Google, automated features. I would try Spotify. I think that's the one you're going to like.
And then Google, they won't work on the Roku.
Yeah, they will. Google works everywhere. I'm pretty sure Google's even... Now, that's a question if it's on Apple TV or not. It is on the Roku, though. Both Apple and Google have a feature that you might like, which is you can connect them to your collection and upload all your music to them. So for a long time, nobody had the Beatles, but I had all the Beatles music and a good high quality. So because I was able to upload the Beatles to Google Music and Apple Music, I was able to listen to the entire Beatles collection, even though they didn't offer it as part of their streaming service. Now the Beatles are everywhere, so it's not as big a deal. I would, you know, Apple Music's going to be a good choice for you. Spotify is going to be a good choice. Those are the two I would look at. And Apple, you know, Apple is all in on music, so they're going to get better and better. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. What do you guys think? I wonder what the chat room. What music service? Henry, don't go away, Kenny. Hold on a second. So, Kenny, what would you be looking for in a music service?
I was looking for something that can play with Echoes and Apple. And I just got a Roku and kind of messing with that.
Oh, Echo 2. Well, Echo, I have to look at the Echo app, but I think Echo will tie into almost everything. But it's weird because there are, you know, there are gaps. Like Amazon doesn't like Apple. And so there's these little weird gaps.
Yeah, I got the Roku just to play the Amazon instant video stuff.
Right, and it has Amazon on it. And I'm pretty sure it has Google Music on it. It doesn't have Apple, though. It does have Spotify. Spotify, I think, is everywhere, including on your Alexa.
Okay, is it on the Apple TV, too? Or?
Yep. Well, let me check just to make sure. Pretty sure it is. No, shoot. What? So the way you're going to do it with your Apple TV is with AirPlay. You're going to have it play on your phone and then AirPlay it to the Apple TV.
Okay, AirPlay it. Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of a pain in the butt. That's the problem is these guys are all, anti-competitive. They're all trying to screw each other. Here's one interesting other choice. If you use Google Play Music, you get YouTube Red with it free, which is the ad-free version of YouTube. That plays everywhere. YouTube plays everywhere. So you can use your YouTube app on Apple TV, on Roku, on Amazon. Amazon plays Google. So Google Play Music is an interesting, a good choice too. Google Play Music, they all have roughly the same pile of records. So it's really more about who it works with and how you like the interface. But I think if for $10 a month where you get unlimited, the full Google unlimited music set, you also get ad-free YouTube, you get all the music on YouTube in high quality. And can you... listen, I think you can listen to the music on your Apple TV as a result. That's an interesting question. Now I've got it. Now, boy, you know, I have. Isn't this ridiculous?
Yeah. It's
you can get different things for different things. It looks like Google Play Music. You're going to have to do AirPlay as well.
Okay.
Unfortunately, looks like that anything but Apple Music is going to have to be AirPlayed. Oh, there is you could add a Google Play channel to Plex or Kodi. Plex is available on Apple TV. So you could actually, if you added Plex to your Apple TV and then added the Google Music channel, you'd be able to listen on your Apple TV.
Oh, okay.
That's kind of a weird workaround. And you can always AirPlay.
You're on doing that?
No.
Oh, okay. I had a real quick separate question. You mentioned the streaming, you know, all the streaming things, and I got the AT&T Direct now for $35. I jumped in. You know,
how do you like it?
Cheaper. It's good.
I had a lot of problems with, but this was early on. Channels not playing, just being black, and
They said they were working on it, but they've done some updates and it seems to work real good.
Oh, good.
Now. And I got the Go Big package, which is not their top of the line, but it's right below that. And it has over 100 channels. And
nice. How much is that?
They gave me, right now it's 60, but I got it when it was 35.
Nice. Well, that's a hell of a deal.
And I was wondering how that stacked against Google.
That's a great deal. Google's very limited where you can get it right now, and it is $35 for a much smaller set of channels. Doesn't even include Showtime. So I think because you got that early adopter bonus, I would stick with that. I think that sounds great. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Both Pandora and Tidal are, you know, as also RANs and music services, offering extended trials. I think they both have 6-month trials. So you could get the and many of these have free tiers, but the free Spotify, for instance, has a much more limited set of music and some restrictions on it. And then it probably also has ads. Record labels hate the free streaming services. Remember, Taylor Swift last year said, I will not let my record on any of these services that have free tiers because I deserve to be paid for my music. I can't disagree with her. Certainly her choice. Many, many listeners say, I don't want to pay for music. Then you got a kind of a disconnect there. 8888 Ask Leo. I'd love to hear from you. What music service do you like and why? The thing that worries me, I really worry, I hope Spotify and Pandora and, you know, SoundCloud is on the rocks. I hope these companies can survive. They're kind of at the mercy of the music industry. They only survive as long as the music industry wants them to. And the music industry squeezes them so tight, it's hard for them to make any money at all. Albert, Las Vegas. Hello, Albert. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, help.
Help me, Mr. Obi-Wan.
Help.
Help me.
I bought a VLOP Linksys mesh router.
Oh, that's their new mesh. How do you like that?
Well, it's awesome, except it doesn't play my Chromecast.
Ay, ay, ay.
And I've done everything other than throw it out and get a new one.
So this is one of those, it's a Wi-Fi router. It's one of the ones that VLOP is the one that lets you have multiple units, and they make a mesh of Wi-Fi, which is better for large houses. Solves a lot of problems that people have with their Wi-Fi. VLOP is kind of an also, you know, Linksys has been around forever, and they started getting their lunch eaten by companies like Eero and Plume and Luma and all these companies, so they decided to make their own. I have not played with VLOP. It's very expensive, $500 for a 3-router system. Now, you're saying, let me clarify, I want to understand what you're saying. You're saying that you can't use your Chromecast on the VLOP network.
Right. Okay, let me start from the beginning and tell you exactly how it went down.
Okay.
I had the Netgear, I believe it was the 900 dual band.
Yep.
Worked perfectly on both Chromecasts. And then I got the Google Home with the VLOP. Everything, it works on my phone. Everything works on the phones, on the mobile, on the tablet. But off my desktop to the TVs, it doesn't work.
And you've tried reconfiguring your Chromecast, right? You've gone into the Chromecast app, the Home app. And
about 6 times.
Okay. And when you do that, can the Chromecast see the network?
Yep.
So the Chromecast think they're on your VLOP Wi-Fi, but
right.
You can't see the Chromecast from any of your devices. You go to your Android device and try to cast Netflix. No. You can't see it.
All my portables work. My phones, my tablets,
oh.
All that work.
Oh.
My desktop doesn't work.
Just the desktop.
Just the desktop.
Well, how are you using Chromecast on the desktop? You're doing it in Google Chrome, right?
Right. I got the original version 1 of the Chromecast when it first came out. Never had a bit of problem with it.
And you were able to mirror your browser's contents right over to your big screen TV using the Chromecast.
Yep, everything. Yeah. Worked like the charm where I went and bought another one.
Huh. That was a beta. It was a beta capability. I'm wondering if there are issues with doing that. I love Chromecast, by the way. $35 or $45, depending on which one you use, device. You plug into the HDMI port on your TV. It's on your Wi-Fi. You can now see it from your portable devices and even your computer, although it's really designed for your portable devices. And any app that's Chromecast aware will pop up a little when you're, let's say, running Netflix. It'll pop up a little Chromecast logo in the upper right-hand corner, and you can say, yeah, instead of watching this movie on my phone, my little 5-inch phone, why don't you send that over to the big screen TV? You could choose, if you have multiple Chromecasts, you'll get a menu with all their names. You say, send that to the living room TV. Living room TV will go, you know, stutter a little bit and then say, and start playing the movie. Furthermore, you can control the movie from your TV, pause it, rewind it, stop it. Or you can, you know, shut your phone down and it'll keep playing because the Chromecast takes over the stream. It's the one receiving the Wi-Fi and continues to play. I don't think there's a problem particularly with the VLOP and the Chromecast. I'm just not sure. It's Wi-Fi's Wi-Fi. If your computer's on Wi-Fi and on the same network as your Chromecast, you should be able to cast to it. You're using the cast button on the Chrome browser, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Like I said, with the Netgear, I had no problems.
Does it see the Chromecasts?
Yeah.
It sees them. It just doesn't start.
It doesn't see them. It says no.
Okay.
No destination.
It doesn't show up in the menu there. Well, right, you got me. I'm not sure why. I do feel like the browser Chromecast was beta, and I do remember Google said, "Well, we can't always promise this is going to work." And I'm wondering if it doesn't make sense that they have problems with one brand of router, but. Anybody in the chat room have any idea why his Chrome, desktop Chrome browser can't Chromecast? Well, doesn't even see the Chromecasts when everything else does. Is it possible it's far away? Yeah, that's the whole idea of the VLOP, isn't it? That you have three routers and nothing's too far away. Obviously, you're on the Wi-Fi, so that doesn't make any sense. You're able to surf. I don't know. Ah, okay. Good point, Yo Dave. Perhaps, and this might be an issue with the VLOP, all of these mesh routers that I've seen are at least dual band. Some are tri-band. That means they have 2.4 gigahertz and 1 or 2 5 gigahertz channels. I wonder if the Chromecast... Could it be the Chrome? It shouldn't make any difference, though. The Chromecast is on one channel and his computer is on another. Would that make any difference? It shouldn't. The whole idea of the router is that it handles this kind of thing. But maybe the VLOP's got a bug. Don't know. I'll tell you what. Keep listening. Maybe we'll find somebody in the chat room who's had a issue with this. We can think of a lot of reasons why it might happen, but it shouldn't. It should work. And it may be a VLOP issue. Mike B. is quoting a help file from Google that says, sometimes a Chrome discovers a device on the network but cannot establish a connection to it. These errors are usually caused by router or networking settings. Please ensure that AP isolation is disabled on your router and that any firewall features on your router that might block incoming connections to your Chromecast built-in speakers are not enabled. That could be. Maybe look at the VLOP settings. Make sure that turn on UPnP, Universal Plug and Play, just in case the Chromecast needs that. Make sure isolation is turned off. The problem with a lot of these mesh routers is you have a very limited set of settings. You know, they're really designed for consumers, and so they're not nearly as flexible and sophisticated as old school routers. I've been using them all. I'm a big fan. I set my mom up with the Eero. I set my daughter up with the Google Home. But in our house, which is a fairly large house, 4,000 square feet. I ended up using the Plume because you can put one in each room. In fact, you're supposed to, which makes them kind of expensive if you have a lot of them. They're $79 each. But it has worked very well in a very challenging Wi-Fi environment. I've been very happy. Plume, Wi-Fi.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, look. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, will join us in moments with a crazy gadget. Stay tuned. Square feet. I had good results with the Eero. Less good results with the Amplify. Well, no, Amplify was fine. The Google Home or Google Wi-Fi was okay. Problem is, it's hard to test these because they all claim to improve over time, and that's been actually my experience. The longer you give them, often, and the Plume is amazing. The Plume does all sorts of weird, you know, stuff. I'll show you my Plume layout, which is crazy. Crazy. What do you use, Dickie D, for your router?
I am using, you know what? I have Time One, so it's all in one. It's from
it's
Ubi.
Theirs. It's theirs. Yeah. Oh, yeah, but you have an Ubi.
Ubi, yeah.
Ubi! Ubi dooby doo.
It has a meter on the side, so I can watch the dollars floating away.
You need that. Kind of unique. You need that, yeah. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. Oh, look who's here. It's Dicky Di Bartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. Hello, Dicky D. You got a haircut.
Yeah. No, I got them all cut, actually. I thought it was just easier that way.
Somebody knows that you got a haircut. That's impressive. People pay attention, even on the radio. It's amazing.
Now, that's 20/20 vision.
That's very good
when
vision.
When you can see that through that speaker.
So what do you got for every day, every week,
you know,
Dick joins
us. Last week, we had like a gag thing with...
Did people... You know what? I think people took you seriously. I got a lot of emails saying, where can I get that Digivina? That's a great idea.
And you did very well with, oh, this is exciting, and this is break... That was very... It was
breakthrough,
very
breakthrough device.
Exactly. Now, this one is for real. So okay. There was a show in New York called Luxury Technology Show. Yeah. And this... It's a 3D printer for $99.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so this is how they get to $99 because they say, big banner on the wall, it's $99 because you already own the other half of our 3D printer.
Oh dear.
Okay.
Yeah, what would that be?
That would be, Leo, this is very clever. That would be your smartphone.
Oh.
Your smartphone becomes the printing, the 3D printing platform. So normally a 3D printer uses ultraviolet light.
Yes.
This 3D printer called Ono, O-N-O, uses visible light. The visible light from your smartphone. And they've developed their own resins that harden.
Wait a minute. Your smartphone is the laser?
Yes, the smartphone is providing the light to build your 3D item. What? So it's very bizarre. So it's a black box, and your smartphone is at the bottom. Then you be sure you put the overlay over your phone, the protective layer over your phone.
Yeah.
And then you pour in the resin.
Yeah.
So the resin is into this box. Your phone is at the very bottom.
Yeah.
Then... You pick out whatever you design your own 3D thing or go to their website and send designs to it. And it takes anywhere from 2 hours to 2.5 hours.
Have you seen this work or is this just
You know, Leah, I've seen that. No, they have video on their website of it actually building. At the show, they just had a table of everything they had built in one of these devices, but they were not building them there since it takes a couple of hours to build the smallest thing. Leah,
it come out of your phone? I don't know. I'm confused.
It doesn't come out of your phone. Your phone is just laying on a table.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the box lays over it.
Yeah.
Then you put the plastic over your phone to protect it.
Yeah.
Then you pour resin in. Now it's building it upside down. Then you put in the top of the 3D printer, and it has a plate on it, and the plate starts raising up as the printer is building your 3D object. And when you're done, you lift that plate, and the 3D object is stuck to the bottom of this plate. Nothing is...
I don't understand.
I put a little link on my website to see it in action. Okay.
Okay. All right. Okay. Gizwiz.biz.
Is right.
And then I click the
tech guy.
Gizwiz visits tech guy.
Right.
All right.
And then it says, see this printer printing in action.
Yeah.
And someone's picking out a design there.
This is bizarre. I don't understand how this works. Do I have to wear rubber gloves? Do I have to put the phone in? Oh, the phone has a protective thing over it.
Thing. Okay. They cut one wall out.
Wait a minute. So he's pouring resin into the phone.
Well, no. That's why you have that protective shield.
The shield is holding the resin.
Yeah,
okay.
Your phone is underneath. Okay, now the plate is in the resin. Your phone is under this, under a plastic shield, okay? All your phone is doing is providing the blinking light.
I had no idea that that's how 3D printers worked, was with blinking light.
It is now. This one is.
This is baffling to me. This is magic.
Yeah. So this little
what if
thing
somebody
that they
calls
built,
you during the print cycle?
Oh, well, then you'll see their name engraved in resin. You call your friends. You call everybody up and you say, "I'll be printing."
Is this Don't another? It's not April Fool's, Dick. It's April 8th.
Can't. I know. I said to Dennis, I said, I'm going to do the 3D printer that we saw at the luxury show. He said, Leo's going to think it's another April Fool's.
ONO3D.net if you want to look at the videos, or actually, best to go to gizwiz.biz, Dick's website, and he's got links to videos. And so this was on Kickstarter.
Kickstarter, they got more than $2 million. And they started shipping to the backers last month, and they said that in April it'll be online to buy for $99. And you have to obviously use their resin. It's a liquid resin, and that's $15. And I asked how much will the bottle of resin produce? And the woman said that, you know, that little honeycomb thing
in our video.
She said you can make three of those.
Oh, that's a lot.
With one bottle of resin. Yeah, that's pretty
good.
It's
not a traditional 3D printer. It's something else. But I have a question. When you said, does this thing work? Did they say, oh, no? Oh, no.
I said, can I bring my own teeth? And she said, yeah, why not?
Oh, no.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So next week, if you see me with gold teeth, you know that I use the wrong resin.
This is wild. I mean, wow. And it's cheap. What does it, Android, iOS? Did they say it?
Android and iOS. However, the better your phone, the better the 3D object.
What do you mean better? Okay. Better how?
Like if you, the screen resolution.
Oh, so it should work great with my,
you're going to get a 99 cent 3D.
But it should work great with my, my new Galaxy S8 Plus. That should.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can
go to gizwiz.biz. That's Dick's site. And you can find out all about this and the Digivina that takes old soda bottles and turns them into MP3 records and a lot of other great stuff. You can even play the What the Heck Is It contest, a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. Well, Dick, thank you. Boy, that is the wildest gadget you've brought us in a long time.
Yeah, I know.
Oh,
well, thank
you.
Okay, I expect you to get one for your show.
It's only $99. How bad could it be?
Oh, you better buy 10.
Do you get the resin? Do you get some resin with that?
I bet they
charge $99 for the printer and then $100 a bottle for the resin.
No, resin's $15
a bottle. Okay.
$15 a bottle.
Apparently, Jammer B's looked into this. You said it. He was listening. Well, nice job, Jammer B. I should be listening too, but I'm too busy going, oh no. Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy. I'll see you next week.
Take care, my friend.
Okay, bye.
Hey, thanks to Michael Cozy, our musical director. Thanks to Heather Hammond, our phone ranger. Thanks to you for being here. I hope you had a good time, and I hope you come back again. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.